Hi, friends, and welcome back to the By Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you've joined me. I am thrilled to be back for a brand new season of By Faith. It's season 10 with a subject that is near and dear to my heart, vocational ministry. We're going to be talking about it all season. I have a new book coming out in March 2022 called How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. One of the challenges of writing for pastors' wives is that we are all different. We all approach our roles differently, we live in different contexts, we come from different backgrounds, and we serve in all kinds of different churches. In other words, no ministry wife is the same. So we need resources that give us various perspectives to help us to run the race God has marked out for us. In my first book, The Church Planting Wife, I included interviews with various church planting wives. With my new book, I decided to do interviews with ministry wives here instead so that you can hear their voices and stories in detail and learn from their insights. I'm so excited to share these conversations with you. This season, you'll hear from pastors' wives, pastors and women in ministry on topics such as marriage and ministry, men and women working together on staff, bivocational ministry, parachurch ministry, the pastor's wife's emotional and spiritual health, staff and team dynamics, navigating church conflict and church hurt, and a lot more. If you haven't already, you're going to want to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so that you don't miss a single episode. Today's episode is with my husband, Kyle. In our conversation, we talk candidly about the personal side of ministry, specifically how identity can get distorted, leading to idolatry. And in fact, we share how we've seen this happen in our own lives, especially in the last few years. These kinds of distortions obviously affect marriage, so in the second half of the conversation, we talk about unhealthy marriage dynamics for ministry couples and what we can do to put our priorities and identities in their proper order and proper place. I would recommend listening to this episode with your spouse so that you can talk through some of the issues we bring up together. I hope it helps you and encourages you. Here, friends, is my conversation with my husband, Kyle. Hey, everybody, it's Christine, and welcome back to By Faith. I haven't had a new season and new interviews in a while, but I'm back, and I have a whole almost school year planned of fun episodes and talking about difficult things as well related to ministry. And today I thought it would be perfect to kick off with my husband joining me. Kyle, welcome to By Faith.
Thanks. You asked, and the answer is yes.
The answer is always yes.
Always yes.
When I ask. I love when you join me because a lot of times we have conversations, just the two of us, about ministry life that I wish we could record or we had recorded because we kind of work through things. And I just the whole time know that other pastors and pastors' wives are dealing with the exact same things we're talking about. And so I'm just hoping today that we can have a conversation, kind of like what we do at home sometimes, but let other people listen in and hopefully find themselves in our story and maybe learn a few things or two and be encouraged, be challenged. And really, this is setting the structure and the scope of what we want to do this whole season on By Faith, is just have some conversations about what pastors and pastors' wives are dealing with. And of course, it's not just pastors and pastors' wives. It could be missionaries. It could be parachurch folks. It could be women on staff at a church. It could be pastors who listen in just because they want to understand what their wives are dealing with. And so that's really the idea for today, is just let's talk and let people listen in and talk about what the past few years have been for us and what we've learned. We've learned a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And so does that sound good to you?
Let's talk.
Why don't you, just for the listeners, let's set the context from where we're speaking, because everybody's in a different context in different churches, different roles, but let's let them know our context so they can kind of picture where we are and where we're coming from. So can you tell us about our church?
Yeah, so we moved up to Virginia from Texas 13 years ago to start a church that we began in our living room, and it just kind of has grown from there. And so we feel like we're not necessarily church. I don't feel like I'm a church planter anymore, but I'm more of a pastor.
Yeah, well, definitely. We have an established church, but we do not have a building. Correct. And that has created, we're going to talk about in a second, the problems that's created for us in COVID times. But there's a little bit that still feels like a church plant because of that. And mm-hmm. we live in a really transient place. We live in Charlottesville, Virginia, where the University of Virginia is, and a lot of people come in and out for grad school, undergrad, and it's an expensive place to live, and so people generally try, I think, move out too because they can't afford to live here.
Yeah, once they have babies, it seems like, and they need more space, then oftentimes they can move.
Right, or move close back to family. Nobody is really from here. There's a few people we know from here, but most people are not.
Yeah. Being here 13 years means we've been here longer than most people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And our church is elder-led. We have 5 elders, my husband being one of them. We also have church staff of how many?
5. 4 are full-time, and then 1's part-time.
Mm-hmm. 3 men, 2 women on staff, and so that's kind of what where we're coming from. And I would say I'm a leader, a pastor's wife who considers herself a leader and likes to be alongside Kyle. And I don't always get to do that now because of the stages of life that we've been in. There have been times I've been more involved and times I've been less involved, but I do very much like to use my gifts within the church. And I would say those gifts are leadership, teaching, and I don't know, what would you say?
Yeah, I think that we're a complementarian church, but highly values the role of women in ministry and tries to use those within what we feel are the
appropriate
roles in the Bible.
Yeah. So that's us. We have 3 boys, 18, 15, and 13. Our oldest just went off to college. And so we're kind of in a transition time. But let's talk about COVID because...
Everyone's favorite conversation.
I know. We all love to talk about it. And the people who are listening, it's not like they don't know. You know, they have their own story of how COVID has affected them, and some in more tragic ways than others. I just would like for you, Kyle, to give voice to what pastors have experienced over the past 18 months.
Yeah, so COVID from a pastoral perspective has meant shepherding people from afar. Like it's meant different things at different stages of COVID. The first one was, how do you shepherd people that you can't see, interact with, you know, personally? And then it moved into, how do you make decisions based upon changing information and data? And how do you make decisions based upon people's preference and thoughts on masks or vaccines? And so all along the way for the last 18 months, you're making decisions on things that you have no framework to make decisions on, and also pastoring people in different stages of struggle with what's happening either culturally or related to the disease or different contexts of belief. And so it's definitely been a fluctuating experience that has brought forth a lot of challenges.
Yeah,
for sure.
No pastor going through seminary got any sort of class or training on pandemics or masks, vaccines, that kind of thing. It's almost like I've watched you have to set aside, and not totally set aside, but almost the role and the idea of pastor and what you're called to do has in some ways gotten shoved to the side because you're having to deal with things that you just are not trained to deal with. And also you don't have experience. No one has experience, but yet people are looking to you to make decisions and to lead them. And so I would say I think the challenge for many pastors that I see is that they can't be the pastor that they really want to be. They can't see people for a while. They don't know where the sheep are. It really changed the way and had everything had to be rethought, right?
Yeah.
And so do you have other thoughts?
It's just different. It comes down to, it's a different kind of pastoring. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still a pastor, and the role of pastoring is the same, but there are new big things going on to help people address and talk through. And so you're just listening to different opinions and thoughts or questions in different ways than you were previously.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just this, the role of pastor is not different, but the way that you do it
yeah.
and the context has changed.
Right, right. I'm glad you clarified that, because you still are pastoring, and I think you've done an excellent job, but it's definitely been challenging, and I've watched that. And also for us, part of the equation is not having a building. So prior to COVID, we were meeting in an elementary school. So when everything shut down, we were not allowed to meet in that building any longer. So can you talk about some of the challenges that have come for people like us who are church planters or don't have a building that's a controllable space?
Yeah. So being portable worked really well until it did not. And that all changed in one day. And so, you know, in one day, we got the phone call that we can't meet at the school that we normally meet at. And that has sent us on an 18-month adventure to figure out where we're going to meet. Sometimes on a Wednesday, we don't know where we're going to be on a Sunday. And then also, it puts us in a position where if we can meet at a place, you know, there it comes with guidelines and expectations that we want to honor in order to be in that place, but maybe that they are different than what we would choose to do if we had our own controlled location.
Right.
And so then that brings more questions like, why do we have to do this way? Why do we, you know, people may struggle to agree with that, and that's fine, but this is what it means to be at a location and to think through, like, all right, does the biblical mandate to not forsake the gathering, is that the highest ideal over whatever we may think about having to wear masks or not wearing masks or having different mm-hmm. space requirements?
Mm-hmm. So just logistically, we stopped meeting for a few months. We were online. And then June 2020, another church in town who has a large sanctuary, they were so gracious in allowing us to meet there in the evening. So we had church in the evenings for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
Till this past summer, 2021, we went to 10 a.m. again, and in the mornings, Sunday mornings, and we started meeting at a different school that then decided they did not want outside groups. So a few weeks into that, we were homeless, and we just this past Sunday got back into our elementary school that we originally met in, and we have it guaranteed for a little bit.
A month.
So the stress, I mean, I know you listening, you know the stress of pastoral ministry, and you know the stress of all the decisions, but the stress of that alone has been really difficult. So that all, Kyle, are things that people can see. That's all, you know, public facing decisions and where the church is and, you know, preaching through this and all of that. But this has had an impact on pastors personally and their families. And it's definitely had an impact on us.
For sure.
So can you speak to some of that, of what has, you and I talk a lot about how COVID has revealed so much to everyone. You know, don't have to be a pastor or a pastor's wife. But COVID just brought things to the surface of our hearts to show us the reality of what was going on that maybe we never slowed down to see, or we couldn't have seen in different situations. So can you describe for me what this time, what has God revealed to you through the stresses of COVID?
I think it's revealed for me some two issues that I think that we'll be spending time talking about is questions of identity, like who am I outside of being a pastor? And then questions of idolatry, you know, of like, what are the things going on in my heart and in my mind that maybe in the normal flow of life and ministry were, didn't get exposed for what they were, but were there. And I think COVID has come for everyone in one form or fashion. And for me, it definitely revealed a lot of, you know, selfishness of like a baptized selfishness. I thinking that I was doing things for Jesus when I think I was doing things for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that got exposed, but there's just been a lot of breaking and realization and conviction of sin on my part. That's really been hard to come to grips with in a minute, many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Can you, and I'm going to answer this question too. I'm not just making you answer it, but can you kind of go a little more into detail about what, how did that selfishness and that reliance on self and all of that come into play? Like, why did COVID do that?
I think, so for me, a part of the selfish component of things was there was a part where I always felt like I was needing to perform well. Mm-hmm. I was needing to do well, to make progress, to grow the church, to all these things. And I had it, I could speak about it under the lens of like, well, I'm doing this for the cause of God's kingdom.
Right.
Like, this is for Jesus. This is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when COVID hit, it just realized like, man, who is this for? And I think that there was a sense of that there was more self in the mix of all of that than I would have liked to have admitted,
mm-hmm.
or that I was aware of, because I was just undone unnecessarily by so many things that happen, whether it's criticism or the difficulty of the time and the task. And I just realized, man, I am looking to people for affirmation and approval and not to the Lord. And so when those things didn't come my way, I really was like, okay, I'm doing this for the wrong reasons in ways that I thought were right and good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think probably a lot of people have felt squeezed so hard by the circumstances. And it's really that stress, the overwhelming stress that brought these things to the surface for you. And it's been really great as your wife to watch you repent and confess and, you know, even sharing some of this with the church and just watching God transform you. And I don't love the circumstances that have happened for all of us, but I do. Your response is exactly what God would want, is allowing him to use it for his glory and for your good, even though it's been hard.
Yeah, I feel like it was, I came under the discipline of the Lord and was shattered in many ways and so hard, but coming through things, I've seen a lot of really great things as well, mm-hmm. that I'm incredibly thankful for.
Mm-hmm. For me, COVID, at first, I was very relieved when things shut down. Very relieved.
Wow.
I think I needed a break from the week in, week out demands of church life. And so at first, I was like, this is great. I can take a breath. But then I started worrying. Worrying about, are we going to make it? Are you going to make it? Mm-hmm. I was very concerned for you because I saw the stress in your life. I was worried for my children. But in terms of ministry, it really challenged me to think about, do I really trust all of this to the Lord? Or do I try to work to stay one step ahead of things? In other words, fear that things are going to fall apart. Well, if I just work hard enough, I can stay one step ahead of it. It won't fall apart if I'm actively working and doing things. And I think I realized there's nothing I can do. There is nothing right. I can do. I am in my home and I don't know necessarily where people are, what they're experiencing. I can reach out to them, but I can't solve or rescue you or the situation. And I think I am a rescuer. I am a fixer. I'm a doer, a performer. And so I think that that was a huge light bulb for me. Like, all I can do is really trust the Lord in this and to pray and ask him to meet people where they are, to meet me and you where we are, and trust that we're going to be okay. And mm-hmm. so that was one thing. And I think I said at the beginning, it was a relief to not meet together. a few weeks in, I started realizing I miss meeting together. I miss the church. I miss gathering with the saints and worshiping and hearing the word preached. And, you know, the first time we were able to be together again, I saw it in with new eyes, because I my soul was thirsty for that. And I think I have developed a newer appreciation for people in our church who, all people in our church, but you know, when I return and I see their delight and joy in worshiping together and their desire to grow and to be changed and all that, it just really has given me a deeper appreciation for the gift that is the church.
No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
So let's talk about some of the things you brought up. So we want to talk today about identity and idolatry. And this, like I said earlier, this is a conversation that we've been having a lot together. And so I just think it's so important, because I don't think this is something that we talk about that much in pastoral ministry. Pastors, at least, I don't know, but pastors don't seem to talk much about this. And pastors' wives, we don't talk about this. Like, this is really getting to the heart of why we do what we do and how we view ourselves. And so let's talk about identity first. I think it's really easy to center our lives as pastors and pastors' wives around that title, around that role. And so I'm wondering, why do you think that is? And have you experienced that in any form? I already know the answer, but will you answer that question?
Sure. Yes, I have experienced that, that pull. I think it comes about for several different ways and reasons. I think other people see me and you as the pastor's wife through that lens. And so
they don't see you as the pastor's wife.
No, they don't. They see me as the pastor.
Yes.
So I think other people, that's how they're going to view us. I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, but mm-hmm. that's just, they notice that about us. And when we walk into, they're like, oh, that is the pastor, mm-hmm. or that is the pastor's mm-hmm. wife.
It's how you get introduced a lot. If you meet, they're introducing you to family or friends.
Or when they're talking to their children, they'll be like, oh, well, you know, answer the pastor's question, or these kinds of things where, and that's not good or bad, and that's not a problem. The problem is when we take that on in an unhealthy way ourselves, where it becomes such this overwhelming identity rather than a part of who we are. It becomes the totality of who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can foster that by relishing that identity in the good times, or we can just get really jaded about that in difficulty. Mm-hmm. But I think always having a proper perspective of where that identity of pastor fits in with the overall identity of who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm. How would we know if we're living according to that identity? That's the primary identity we think of ourselves as, and we're living and relating as. Because I just don't even think sometimes we think much about it.
Yeah, I think a proper way to do that is for you to write out on a piece of paper where all of your identities, who you are and what roles, relationships that you have, and where do you, in your honest writing out, where does pastor or pastor's wife fit? Because I remember when we met with a counselor a long time ago, he was like, really, the identity of pastor for me is way down the list. You know, primarily and first, I'm a redeemed child of God. And then I am the husband of Christine. And then I am a son of my mother. You know, I'm a father of our children. And so the identity of pastor in a healthy way ought to really be five or six, or it'll look different for different people, but it ought to be far down the list.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you can know if you're unhealthy if that's really kind of the first way that you think about yourself as pastor, or if, as a lady, as a pastor's wife.
Yeah, I think if we think of it as what as who we are versus what we do, then that's where it gets twisted. Because being a pastor or a pastor's wife is a good thing. It is a good role. But I have to think of it, this is my opportunity and the way that God has appointed me to serve him is through this role and through the influence that I have. It does not define who I am, as kind of what you just said. It just helps me know what I am to do. For you, it's your work. But it's hard, and this is where the identity comes in, is because on the Venn diagram of life, the pastor's circles generally overlap greatly, and the pastor's wife as well, where your social relationships, your work, and your church family are all typically one.
Right. Interwoven together. And so it's hard to let that title or that role identity of pastor or pastor's wife for it to stay in its proper context.
Yes.
Because it does. It plays a role in your relationships, in your time, even in your devotional life, making sure that you are seeking after Jesus outside of that identity of
right.
pastor.
Right. The way that I know when my identity is out of order is if I'm performing. If I am, okay, I'm going into this situation and I'm immediately putting on my pastor's wife hat because there are church people present. Or maybe it's a small group Bible study and I feel like I have to have the answers because I'm the pastor's wife or whatever that is. If I am performing and kind of putting on that, I mean, everybody knows what I'm talking about. I'm just trying to think of words to describe it, but just, I'm not going in as a child of God,
right?
As a Christine, as a person, I'm going in as a certain like mantle or title. To me, that's a disordered way of doing things.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So how do we, I like how you, and this is something we've been talking about a lot, is you kind of list it out and you'll say that even out loud. It's almost like not a mantra, but like reminding yourself over and over. I'm a redeemed child of God. I'm a husband of Christine. I'm a father of my three boys. And putting that order, like saying that order to yourself and reminding yourself of that. How do you fight to remember that, especially on a day or this time of life where it's so stressful and work does demand so much of your attention? How do you fight to remember that identity?
I think it is daily going before and sitting at the feet of Jesus to get that proper place and context. And then I oftentimes remind myself, the day that I die or I leave, you know, I'm no longer a pastor by whatever means. The church where I am the pastor, they'll immediately start having meetings about who's going to be next. Like, I will be replaced immediately the second that I die or say that I'm going to leave. Mm-hmm. And so I know that it's like, man, that role, that identity of pastor, man, it will come and go. But the other roles that I have, the role of being a dependent child of God, like that is an eternal, forever role. But then the other roles after that are, man, the second that I die and I'm not your husband, like that's a lifetime altering thing for you. Or I'm not the father of our children. And so those are seem like they have much more critical ramifications, where the pastor role, it will come and go. Mm-hmm. And there will be someone immediately after me, and I'll be gone and forgotten.
Mm-hmm. And wrapped up in this conversation is idolatry. And that's something we've been talking a lot about as well, is that it is so easy for us to idolize ministry. And I want to be careful because I don't think every pastor has this issue, but I do think this is very common for pastors to put ministry on such a high priority and that it is the priority. And in some ways they're idolizing what they do. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, I think for clarification, it's idolatry is alive and well within the heart and soul of everyone.
Yes, that's like correct.
As it's been said, the human heart is an idol factory. And so we will create idols out of anything. But those who are in ministry can make idols out of ministry. And so, but that's just what we do. And so it may look different for different people, whether it's whatever their vision of the good life is or how they view ministry, then that can turn into an idol mm-hmm. in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've talked about, we've been going through a book together that has been phenomenal called How We Love by Mylan and
Kay
Yurkovich. We highly recommend, in fact, we keep telling everyone we know about it.
They've made a lot of money off of our recommendations.
It's been so helpful for us to see the patterns. Basically, it's a book that helps you understand how you learn to handle emotions uh-huh. as in your family of origin. And then how do you bring that into marriage? And then how do you create this dynamic within your marriage? And it has been so, so eye-opening for us, given us a lot of compassion for one another and ourselves, I think.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think for you saw is that you have always been placed and chosen roles where you are the hero. Mm-hmm. And that has affected the way that you view ministry.
For sure. Yeah, I think there's a lot of me that's like, I need to go out and perform and win
yeah.
and be successful.
Yeah.
And so much of my identity has been really just an idolatry of performance and gaining the approval and affirmation of people by being the hero, the guy who goes out and wins mm-hmm. and makes things better, fixes things, wins the day. And that has been a part of who I've been and my mentality. And I thought that was normal to operate in that way, where really it's an idol. And then when COVID, where no one wins, you just lose. You know, I really began to see that for what it was, mm-hmm. that has an inordinate pull on my heart.
Yes. And for me, my role, you know, has kind of been making sure everyone is not disappointed. Yeah. And so I have enabled some of that. I also idolize ministry, but in a different way, and have enabled yours because I need you to be successful, and I need, that's in quotation sure. marks, I want you to be successful. I want to help you avoid criticism, help myself avoid criticism or disappointment that people might have. And so I've in some ways pushed you more in that direction. And I think that's something that we've begun to realize. But I think that the way that we know that we're idolizing ministry is if we're looking to it for something for ourselves, like validation or approval or success or what?
Avoidance of failure.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not even what we get, but what we avoid. Anything you can
yes.
you can create an idol out of anything.
Yes, and we've done that, and
that's right.
It's definitely affected us. But it's been so good to be able to see that clearly and to confess and repent and to try to approach ministry differently. And we're going to talk some about that in our marriage in a second. But I think that this is something that, and maybe we can go ahead and jump into the marriage thing, because I think that when any of the conferences that I've been to with you, or, you know, primarily with you, when it comes to what, I could kind of get on a soapbox about this, but when it comes to what pastors are hearing and learning, I feel very rarely hear anything about marriage and about the importance and the priority of marriage over ministry. What do you think?
For sure. There's conferences after conferences on every part of church life, you know, church growth. You can go to a new conference all the time on church growth or church planting or all these kinds of things. And there are marriage conferences as well, but there are very few church conferences where there are honest, big platform conversations about marriage being a priority over ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, because we baptize this idea. That's what you used that term earlier. Can you explain what you mean by baptizing?
Yeah, well, we take these different things and we're like, these idols that we really want are these things that have an inordinate pull on us. And then, but we can sprinkle Jesus on that. And then all of a sudden, we get blinded to the fact that it is an idol.
Right.
So the idea of getting approval and performing well, I can do that and be like, well, I want to do that. I want the church to grow, or I want to preach a good sermon or this or that for the sake of God's glory. But, and so I can look, if I don't look closely,
mm-hmm.
I can be like, well, those are good motivations.
Right.
But if I probe deeply or I get exposed for things, I see a lot of idolatry in that, a lot of selfism.
Mm-hmm. So, and what happens for the wife is, and this is where the marriage comes in, is that we get a message, and sometimes are verbally taught that we have to sacrifice. Especially, I would say this happens especially in church planting, is like, you have to be all in. The wife really determines. Sometimes you hear that. The wife really determines whether the planter is successful or not. She has a huge impact. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But the message that we get is that the marriage must be sacrificed. That the wife should never say no. Or maybe this is just what I picked up. I'll just speak for myself. Is that if you say to me, Christine, there's something that, you know, we need to do a membership class this weekend. Is that okay with you? Well, do I really have a choice? Like, well, yeah, that's okay with me. And so the call is to sacrifice for the wife. Now, is that good? Are we called as Christians to sacrifice? Yes. But is it okay for the wife to have preferences and needs and desires for her marriage to be a priority? Yes. But it can become very, very confusing for pastors' wives to know, how do you draw that line? Is it okay to draw that line? When do you draw that line? And especially if the pastor is baptizing this idea of giving all to the church, it feels wrong for the wife to say, I don't want you to give to something that God has called you to do because I would like some of your attention or time. And that's a place we found ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything about that?
For me, it's healthy to think through it from the perspective of like, does ministry flow out of your marriage, or are those kind of two separate, you know, boxes in at least in a pastor's life? So I think for me, a lot of the challenges we face is like, you know, ministry is this box that you could come and join me in, but then I would go home and leave that box of ministry and be married. But it's like, there wasn't a sense at times for sure of that our marriage is first and foremost, and that ministry is a part of flows. That ministry doesn't flow out of our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, and I think that's where we've run into a lot of problems and a lot of pain.
Can you clarify that? Because I'm not sure. So you're saying that the marriage, that ministry should flow out of the marriage.
Yeah, that the marriage ought to have the priority.
Okay.
And so, you know, who have I made a vow to? Have I made a vow to you, you know, or is it to this church, you know, and God's placed a calling on my life for ministry, but I also have literally felt called and have vowed, and I daily wear a ring as a reminder that my marriage is to be my priority, and not something that I go and be married because the workday of ministry is over.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's been a pivotal thought for us, and we've actually talked about it for many years, but it's come back up. It's just the church is Christ's bride. The church he has vowed to love, die for, and he did, and care for and sustain. And so he has responsibility for the church. Now, does he call pastors to serve in that way, to help that? Yes. Does he call every believer to do that? Yes. And so the vow that the pastor makes is, as Kyle just said, is to his wife. And that is, he is responsible for fulfilling that vow. And to me, that's a helpful distinction. And so one thing that we discovered in our marriage is that we were living in these, I was wanting more separation between church and marriage, ministry and marriage. And a few years ago, I would say before, we were living in the ministry circle, meaning we were together in that. We were both fully engaged there, overly probably, giving our all, wanting to see this succeed. And I would say about 5 years ago, I was like, I need more delineation. And this wasn't a super conscious thought process, but I look back now and I think that's what I was trying to do, was to say, okay, I have a few, 5 to 10 years left with my kids at home. Like, that's the priority. I really felt the Lord calling me out of some of the things I was doing in ministry at church. So I went to the marriage circle. So you can imagine two circles and they were separate. And I left the ministry circle, not totally. I was still supportive, helpful, doing what I could do. I left and went to the marriage circle. Well, I would say Kyle stayed in the ministry circle. And so for a few years, I really struggled to, like, something didn't feel right. And so I kept trying to get back into the ministry circle because that's where I could engage with you.
Yeah, I think to my shame, It got to a point at times where for us to connect, you had to be in the ministry circle with me.
Right.
I didn't leave and join you in the marriage circle.
You would, but it would be like we would go on vacation or
she would often call Fridays. Me a vacation husband.
No, I didn't call you that. You said that when we were on vacation last year. We realized that this was the dynamic we had created.
I think that's
because
right.
We had wonderful time together when we were on your day off or when we go on vacation. And let's talk about that. Because we were sitting on vacation and we were about to go home. And I just was so upset. Because in my mind, I thought, we're going to get home. And it's like me standing at the door waving, saying goodbye to you. You're going back to your work. You're going back to the people who are standing in line at the door waiting to have you answer all their questions and needs and concerns. And when I realized that and I told Kyle, it was kind of a light bulb moment. And actually, this shows up in my new book because we kind of developed this word picture of our lives and in seeing how it was disordered. Mm-hmm. And how we wanted to put it in order. And so we talked about it as the place where we were on vacation, this little cabana that we were staying in. I said, I feel like when we go home, it's like we go to that door of the cabana and I wave goodbye and we go in separate directions. And you go to the ministry circle and I go to the marriage circle and wait for you for our next vacation.
That's right.
And I think that was really helpful for me and it was really helpful for you because it wasn't that you were resistant to this. We were both like, how do we do this well? And so we decided to kind of talk in the language of that cabana and to draw a picture of how we were going to set our life in order. That we were going to be together in the marriage circle. We're using multiple analogies here. We were going to be together in the marriage circle and you would leave to go to work. But you were married. It wasn't that, I don't know if that makes sense to the listener, but it was like, I don't have to join you in the ministry circle in order to connect with you. That's You're right. going to be with me in the marriage circle, and I'm going to support you, and I am going to join you in what you do. But the connection is in marriage, not over ministry.
Yeah. And I would imagine there are a lot of wives that feel like to connect with their husband is to join them in that ministry circle. And that's a rough place to be. That's a rough place to be for wives and husbands, pastors. Like, that's going to blow up at some point in time. Like, you'll run aground as well. And so receive this as a word from a brother. Pay attention to what's to your life and how things are going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pay attention to your walk with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a love? Are you in a healthy, vibrant love relationship with the Lord?
Are you creating connection with your bride? Mm-hmm. Are you cultivating? Are you thinking about how you can connect with her, how you can serve her, how you can care for your wife? Or is it just Jesus' bride?
Mm-hmm. And I would say, too, are you listening to your wife? You know, if she's saying, for me, I was saying some things, but I couldn't pinpoint exactly what was off. But I was upset quite a bit. But I thought it was me, you know, like, oh, it's my fault and I need to, I'm not sacrificing enough or I don't know what. But I think listening to your wife, if she's struggling, then you do what you need to do to pause and to really try to understand where she's at and to be a part of helping her thrive. Right?
Yeah, for sure. I think that viewing her as the helper that God ordained to give to you. And so she has a lot of wisdom and things to offer that you may not be able to even understand or see for yourself, but taking the time to really listen well. You mm-hmm. would say, like, I don't think you understand. And I would be like, I understand completely. I just think you're wrong or think that you maybe don't understand me.
Mm.
And there's not enough really considering and listening well
mm-hmm.
to what you are saying.
Mm-hmm. And two things. One, when you say she's your helper, sometimes I bristle. I don't bristle at the biblical term helper, but a lot of times I think pastors' wives go to, I'm the helper for the ministry.
Yeah.
And that's not what you're saying. You're saying to pastors, she's your helper as a person, as a husband and wife. She is your helper to be a fully formed human being that, you know, God wants to use in your life. The second thing is that it wasn't just you. You know, I don't want the listeners to get the idea that, like, everything is your fault and I'm not a part of this dynamic. Like, if you would have just listened, right? Like, I was feeding this unhealthy dynamic as well. And one of the things how I was feeding it was, again, like, pushing for your success, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also pushing for your success for me, not because of you.
Mm-hmm.
For you and for me. But also, I wouldn't say what I needed. I wouldn't say, I didn't feel that I could expect. And this was probably more you, not you, but me, of like, I had this unhealthy idea of sacrifice.
How so?
That I should not demand or expect anything, really. Obviously, like, fidelity and all of that. But when it comes to time, attention, energy, I just was like, well, this comes with the territory, with ministry. Like, this is what it is. Instead of really thinking through, is this what it is? Is this what ministry is supposed to be? Ministry should not be a bad thing for pastors' wives, for me as a pastor's wife. It should be a place where I can use my gifts and I can thrive and I can also enjoy a happy marriage and a happy family. And so I think I just kind of had a distorted idea of what it means to be in ministry.
Yeah, I think our sin, our disorders, our idolatry oftentimes would feed into each other's.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I'm thankful for what God has done. It's been a really hard year for us.
Yeah.
But it's been really good too, because we're seeing these things so much more clearly, and we're having so many conversations about it, and we are truly making changes to adjust and to have a more ordered life.
And it's been so good. That's what's so... You have invited me to life, and you have shown me a better way of living. Us being connected is way better than the push-pull and challenges of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's God's prescribed order works and is mm-hmm. better.
Mm-hmm. I like being in the marriage circle with you and also doing ministry with you.
Yeah. When we are connected, then ministry becomes something that we can enjoy and do in the right ways together.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to come at the complete death of our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So last question, I'm just thinking, there are people listening who can relate to everything we're saying. And that's good, because that's what we wanted to have this conversation for. What would you suggest for, let's say, a pastor's wife is listening on her own, and she's like, man, I think we do have some unhealthy dynamics in our marriage. Maybe there's idolatry in her own heart. Maybe she sees that in her husband and it's affecting their marriage. Where do we start? If we're recognizing those things, where do you suggest that they start?
When in doubt, like they say in the Re-Engage material, draw a circle around yourself and then work on everything inside that circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you may have a husband that doesn't have ears to hear what he needs to hear. And if that's the case, then a lot of growth can happen in your life. A lot of healing can happen, even if you just do that. Like you do some hard work of thinking through, what are idols? What are the things in your heart and soul that are disordered and misplaced affections, and where is Jesus in your affections? Is he kind of around the corner forgotten, or are you like Mary, at his feet every possible moment?
Mm-hmm.
So I would do that, and then I think if your husband is open to that, have these conversations mm-hmm. of like, just, man, what if we all struggle with temptation and idolatry. Like, let's just name those. Let's just talk about those.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then he can list his, you list yours, and then you guys kind of give thoughts and feedback on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring those before the Lord. You know, there's a billion different workbooks and things that you could do that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just begins with just some honest conversation and just seeking the Lord to show you where things are. Where your temptations are and where your disordered affections are.
Yeah, that was a conversation that we had where we shared, here's some things that I am drawn to in terms of idolatry, and naming those to one another, and also so we could ask one another about it.
Mm-hmm.
That was really helpful. So what about pastors? So just a final word to pastors. Hopefully, you know, pastors and pastors' wives are listening together, and they're going to be able to talk about this when they're done listening. What would you say to pastors in this time?
I think it would just, I would recommend that I think for me, just, it's the same word, but think of yourself as a shepherd first. I think as far as your role with the church goes, like, whatever success you have, you'll always want more. It'll never be enough. And then also, like, you will be forgotten. Best case scenario, there will be a picture of you in some forgotten hallway, you know, that no one cares about. But the best investment of your time is going to be in your deepest relationship, the person that you are with your entire life. And the best, obviously, the devotion to the Lord. Like, you'll be loving Him first and foremost from now for forever. And so love Him more, love yourself less, love your church rightly.
Mm-hmm.
But do what Paul says to love your wife as Christ loved the church.
Mm.
Like, that is a life well spent. And then die and go to heaven.
What's that quote you always say? It's somebody, I don't remember.
I didn't come up with it. But it's Zinzendorf. He says, preach the gospel, die, be forgotten. I love it. I love it. It's kind of jarring.
Yeah, but it's true.
But it is. It's a good reminder that there's no legacy for us here. There's like, this is not where we'll ultimately be.
Mm-hmm.
The legacy is Christ. And that, make a lot of Him and less of yourself.
Mm. Thanks, babe, for joining me. This was really, it was just good to have you on, but also to have this conversation knowing people are going to they're going to relate, and I hope they're encouraged and challenged.
Yeah, hopefully it's become very clear that I haven't been up for the Husband of the Year Award.
Been up for the Wife of the Year Award.
But the Lord has done and is doing some really good things
in
us, and for that, I praise the Lord for it.
Thank you so much for listening to this conversation. As always, you can find resources and links that we mention in episodes in the show notes on your podcast platform, or they are also on my website, christinehoover.net. I have also recently created a website where I've collected all of my writing, podcast episodes, and books for women in ministry. You can find that at howtothriveasapastorswife.com. which, if you're paying attention, is the name of my new book, How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife.com. You can find tons of resources, including the books and articles that have been most meaningful to me in my own ministry. Join me next week as I speak with multiple women about how they view their role as pastor's wife. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.